welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Jessica from Syosset Public Library, and our guest today is...
My name is Robin Harding, and I'm the author of several thrillers, and my upcoming book, coming out August 10th, is The Perfect Family.
So this book was really, really good, and I think we talked a little bit before we started recording just about how... in different areas, there's always people who want to put forward an image of being perfection and sort of like the people you envy, the envied people, be it that their kids are like the golden kids in sports, or they have this big, beautiful house and all the nice cars, but there's always something going on under the surface. And with your family, there is several things going on under the surface. Every single one of them has something going on. Tell us about your book and where this all came from.
So as you say, you know, there are so many, I don't think there's a place in the world probably that doesn't have some of their citizens who are putting up a facade and trying to present themselves as something that, I mean, nobody's perfect. So if they look that way, there's always something going on. And I lived in a neighborhood that had some of that. It was a wonderful neighborhood, but there was, you know, a mix of, you know, incomes. And so that was nice, but there were definitely people who looked that way, but nobody is perfect as you get to know people. And the inspiration of this book, the book is about this family trying to present a perfect facade, and they start to become harassed by some kids in the night throwing stuff at their house, and they all have secrets. And no one knows who is the source of this abuse that is escalating and escalating. And the idea came, unfortunately, from an incident when I was living in this, I've moved since a few years ago, but there were some neighborhood hooligans who were targeting certain houses. And mine was one of them. Ooh. And yeah, and I mean, it wasn't anything like the book. It wasn't that bad. It was a lot of like ringing the door bell, running away, throwing eggs or fruit. I think because of the different houses that where it happened, I have a very beautiful teenage daughter, and another house had another, you know, gorgeous teenage daughter who was a little older and unattainable. So I think it may have been related to that. But it didn't stop, and we couldn't stop it. And we were so powerless because they're kids, and it just became so irritating and just the wondering. And yeah, thankfully my family, I don't think any of us had any such dark secrets that were behind this, this harassment. But it was a real feeling of vulnerability when you're in your own home. And you know, it was harmless, but if you did have secrets and you were hiding stuff, how would you feel, and how would you deal with this? Because there isn't a lot you can do. And so this family is powerless and fighting so hard to keep up their perfect facade, because they have very dark secrets, some of them, like life-changing, life-destroying secrets.
Yeah. And that was interesting how everybody had sort of like different levels of secrets that, I mean, and in a way, I suppose all of them were life destroying to a degree.
Right.
I think it's like, it's something I think about a lot, you know, like you can mess up as a kid, I think, and right. You know, like you can sort of figure it out, but then like when you're an adult and you're established, messing up means something completely different. first of all, tell us about the characters and how did you figure out what each one of them was going to be hiding? And you don't mention what it is, because right. that's the delight of reading this book, is yes, figuring out what everybody is hiding.
Yes. Okay. So, yeah, there are varying degrees of secrets here. So the father in the household is a realtor, and he is does very well, or has in the past, keeping up the appearance of the top sales guy, even when the numbers have dipped. And he's sort of, with his secret, it's sort of like a really terrible error in judgment that is haunting him. And he is hiding it at all costs from his wife and children. But his wife knows something is up. So I think what is going on in her head might almost be more damaging to their relationship than what really happened. And the wife, Vivian, the pressure of keeping up appearances, of making her home beautiful and herself, and making sure her kids are succeeding and not embarrassing her, is wearing on her, and she has a very dangerous habit that could really destroy her professionally and personally, and hurt her children, hurt her husband. And it's sort of like a weakness, but very problematic. And then we have the son, who Eli, who has just dropped out of college, and he refuses to tell his parents why. And something happened at college that is very disturbing and inspired, unfortunately, on something that happened here in Canada that was in the news, and a similar event, which I'm sure happens all over.
Unfortunately, because I think, obviously, like I said before, the readers need to figure out what it is on their own. Because it's a really good book. But it is something that unfortunately happens pretty much everywhere, not just in college, but also in all sorts of situations. So very relevant.
Yeah, very disturbing. And I just wanted to kind of delve into like the fallout of that and how horrible and upsetting it is. And yet it still continues that behavior. And then we have the rebel daughter, Taryn, who is a junior in high school and doesn't feel like she fits in. And she is in over her head, I would say, in a risky kind of online sexual world.
I would say she finds sort of like a gratification, but I don't think she realizes what she's getting herself into. Which again I think is very relevant. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording about being teenagers before the age of the internet. And this, for reasons that Taryn experiences, I think that's one of many reasons why I'm sort of relieved that I myself was never exposed to the possibility of that. But at the same time, this is what it is. And it's something that kids are dealing with. So
absolutely. And, I have a daughter who is 21 now. And, we talk very openly about these kind of subjects of, there are kids who make money this way, like sex work. And I don't want to say anything to shame sex workers. These are choices that people make for various reasons. But would I want my daughter to be earning money off her body before she is really ready to feel like make an informed adult choice about that. I would not. So
right, there's a difference between an adult who is, you know, or a child who is either coerced into it, or in this case, is trying to take some sort of control over her changing body or how she's perceived, and is sort of not really aware of what she's getting herself into.
Exactly. She's looking for something and thinking she's finding it in an online world that, you know, she really knows nothing about. So it's risky, and it's so easy, you know, it's so easy. I had to research this. It's, you know, it's just there. It's just there. People, young women, you know, exactly what I wrote in the book, are doing exactly that kind of behavior. So again, I don't give it away, but it was just really eye-opening.
So the escalation of the harassment, it starts with eggs, which is on Thomas's car, no less. I mean, you know, which he needs to take people to houses. So, you know, there's a lot of image in being a real estate person, especially if you're going to be a real estate person selling houses where people want to make an impression with their house. And I like that the term house proud is used.
Yes.
In that Thomas's poor car has egg, and he's dealing with something else while the rest of his family is dealing with something else. So it starts with that, but then it just keeps escalating and getting crazier and crazier. How did you decide how much to give at what point?
Well, you know, I told you I had a somewhat real life situation, which never anything like this, thank God. But it was hard to kind of think creatively. How would you how would you anonymously harass someone and really take it to a point where this family is cracking? Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of creativity went into, okay, what should these anonymous attackers be next, and what is going to be the tipping point? What is going to be the point where, you know, this family will do anything to protect themselves from they don't even know who is after them or why.
I think the creativity was pretty crazy, which, I mean, obviously, if you're going to read, you're reading a thriller, you know, things are going to get out of control. Did you enlist anybody else in ideas? Like, did you bounce some ideas off of people, or was this just totally you journaling, being like, oh, this is good, it has to be this?
So my family, I did have my daughter and my husband, I did ask them, and my son, at one point, I'm gonna give something away, but I have to, because I was like, wasps or snakes? No, we went wasps. I was like, ooh, snakes, but the logistics of snakes was not really going to quite work. So the wasps won out.
I would keep snakes in the back pocket, though, because they're pretty creepy. And I've read some pretty creepy true snake stories.
My husband is from Australia, where, you know, snakes are really a part of everyday life.
Well, Australia is like a whole area where evolution took a detour, and it's like nature is trying to attack you. The spiders are amplified, the snakes are amplified.
Oh, and I grew up in like northern Canada, so my whole life, my mom would say, you know, there'd be a scary tarantula on TV, and she'd say, oh, we don't have those here, or a snake, oh, we don't have those here, you know, oh, don't worry about any of it. And then we lived there for a while, and I was like, I have to worry about all of it now. You know, open the dryer. My friend had a snake in her dryer, like it came in through the air vent. Like, oh my God, so stressful.
It must have been really hard not to use snakes in that fight. So do you read a lot of other thrillers? So we talk to a lot of thriller authors here because a lot of our librarians are huge thriller fans. Do you read other thriller authors' work, or do you, because it's like, it's almost like split 50-50. Half of the people say, oh yeah, I read all of my peers' work and I love it. And then the other half say, I try not to read too much because I don't want to start writing in the voice of somebody else.
Right, right. So I do. I've been writing for a really long time. I used to write rom-coms. I published my first book in 2004, back when it was called Chick Lit. So when I first started, I felt I didn't read anything in my genre because I was so worried about exactly that, like having someone else's voice kind of infiltrate my writing. But I feel, I guess I have more confidence as a writer now. So I do read a lot of thrillers. Often I have to read them to, you know, for a blurb or an endorsement. And then I just really love the genre. That's what I like to read. I change it up a bit, but I really do love the dark stuff. And there's really nothing as good as a shocking twist and a, you know, an evil villain. It's just so much fun.
But you're on to something with the whole, like, so you made the transition from rom-com to thrillers, but rom-com has like awkward moments in it too, I think. Like there's a lot of emotion in both of them. Was it kind of like a hard transition, or did you find that whole emotional connection as well?
It was a really hard transition, actually. I wrote like a YA, I wrote a kind of a comedic memoir. It was just light. It wasn't really that much romance. It was more, a couple of them were, but more just kind of humorous women's fiction. And then the market at the time really dwindled. This was sort of the Bridget Jones's Diary era, the Confessions of a Shopaholic. And, you know, I kind of got in a little bit late and things were just kind of shriveling up for me. And so I took a break and I was working on screenwriting for maybe 5 or 6 years. I focused on that. And that is a hard gig. Holy moly. I did manage to get one independent film I wrote produced, but I did so much. I wrote so many scripts and, you know, it's just really a really tough go. And so I kind of felt like I had learned what I could from that. And I wanted to get back into writing novels. And I just hadn't been reading a lot of rom-coms. I'd been reading thrillers. And so I wondered if I could make that transition. And I had the idea for my first domestic drama, The Party. And I wrote 70 pages and I left it for like 2 years. Because I thought, yeah, while I was still screenwriting, and I just kept going back to it. Every time I went back to it, I thought, you know, I think it's kind of good. And I think it's the kind of book I want to read, but I didn't know if I wanted to write it. And eventually I got to the point, I was like, just push through and finish, because you'll never know. And so once I got into it, once I got into the twists and the turns and dragging these poor characters through all these messes, I saw the fun in it. And I started to really, really enjoy it. And I'm totally in it, and it's not as arduous as it used to be emotionally as when I first started.
I found myself just absolutely absorbing all sorts of thrillers and horror and suspense throughout the pandemic. I think a lot of people have, because it was a good way to kind of keep your mind working beyond the actual craziness that was happening outside of our doors.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote The Perfect Family during the pandemic the first year, and it was very hard to write during the pandemic for me, especially in those first months when we really didn't know what was going to happen and how scared we needed to be. and the isolation. And it was hard to write something like this because it felt like what was happening in the world was so much worse than what was happening in a book. But it was also a great distraction to kind of remember, these are the things that we normally have to worry about, not, you know, a global pandemic. So, yeah, it was tough going for a while, but, I think now it's really nice to read that stuff and get back into these personal problems instead of, you know, world problems.
Yeah, it's been the craziest ride that I think any, so are you working on something else immediately, or are you taking a breather between this book, between The Perfect Family and what comes next?
Well, I'm always working on something, I feel like. So I am, but it's very early in the process, so I'm not really sharing it yet because I kind of have to refine the pitch before I talk about it. And right now it's a bit of a dog's breakfast. I'd be going on and on, you'd be like, what? So I have to figure it out. But I'm having fun with it, and I am working on it. So
what are some of your favorite thrillers that you've been reading?
Have you read Who is Maude Dixon?
No, please tell us.
Oh, it's excellent. I loved it. Maybe because it's about a writer, but it's about a woman who is hired to be the assistant for this very secretive, anonymous author. She writes under the name Maude Dixon, but that's not her real name. Ooh. And this woman, who is an aspiring author herself, goes to this home, her home in a remote area, and they end up going on a trip together, and she's supposed to do research for her and type up her notes. And then she sees a way to become this author herself. And it's very well written and very fun. I loved it.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds really delicious.
Good. Really good. Yeah. So I read that recently.
Very cool. Yeah, that one's gonna go on my list then.
Yeah,
Alexandra Andrews.
Yeah, and it's great. And then there's always Lisa Jewell is always great.
Lisa Jewell, you know. Yeah, Lisa Jewell is actually. I read a Lisa Jewell book right before the pandemic.
Oh, nice.
She's written more since then.
Yes. Have you read Liz Nugent?
No.
Oh, she's an Irish author, and she is one of my absolute favorites. I've done a couple of events with her, and her books, Unraveling Oliver, Lying in Wait, Little Cruelties, excellent. She's just really dark, really good.
Yeah. I recently read Samantha Downing's new book.
Oh, I'm a huge fan, and she's so nice and so supportive. My lovely wife just blew me away.
Yeah, so. that was a book that every turn I was like, wait, what? And you know what? It's so funny. I'm so glad you mentioned My Lovely Wife, because I felt like the two families, even though they were very different, obviously your husband and wife are not Millicent and her unnamed husband.
Right.
Like, but the whole, you know, the fact that there was that real estate part to it, and it was all about putting a front. I was like, oh, they could be twisted neighbors where like I could see like Thomas and Viv being like, man, I wish we could be more like Millicent and her family.
Oh, she did such a great job with that book. I just loved it. From the beginning to the end. So good.
Yeah, I'm going to put out there right now that if you loved My Lovely Wife, this is The Perfect Family is very different. It's not that there's secrets. They're different secrets than the ones in My Lovely Wife. But I think that this is certainly on my reading list of if you liked this.
Oh, awesome.
Read The Perfect Family by Robin Harding.
That's a huge compliment because I loved My Lovely Wife so much. Excellent book.
Thank you so much, Robin. This was a great conversation. And the book comes out
early August.
I'm sorry. the book comes out August 10th. So this episode is going to drop around that time. So I'm going to tell everybody, run out to your bookstore, your library, grab The Perfect Family by Robin Harding. And then let's keep our fingers crossed that the book in progress is ready for us next summer. So yes, we can devour it.
That would be great. Thank you so much for having me, and take care. Hope things are going well there with the pandemic. And
same. All right. We are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.